Hello, this is Mark Peacock, and welcome to the Travel Commons Podcast. This is Travel Commons Podcast number 133, recorded Saturday, September 30th, 2017. This is the podcast giving the voice of the traveler. It's more about the journey than the destination. Two topics on this edition of the Travel Commons Podcast: packing pro tips and traveling injured. So coming to you from the Travel Commons studios outside of Chicago, Illinois, after what has been a light month of travel, just 10 days in Scotland on vacation, and then a quick overnight to Atlanta a couple of days after I got back from Scotland. Other than that, I've been in Chicago, working, trying to get my body clock back to local time. If you look it up, kind of the conventional wisdom says that your body will adjust at the rate of, say, 1 to 2 time zones a day. So for the 6 hours between Chicago and the UK, it should take me, 3 to 5 days to adjust it. So I ought to be adjusted. I don't know. It's felt longer than that. I think just the older I get, the more on one time zone a day than 2 time zones a day I am. It's also harder for me coming west than going east. So when I go to Europe, I can set an alarm to wake up at the right time and will be, kind of will myself out of bed and into the shower. Back in the U.S., though, back in Chicago, I can't quite sort of will myself back to sleep. I wish that was a, travel ninja skill that I have. But, when I'm waking up at 2-3 in the morning, I'm pretty much up. I did find, though, on this trip that when I was over in Europe, over in Scotland, I needed to be careful about how long I stayed up on, say, those first couple of nights. Now, my usual routine is to take, say, maybe a 30-minute nap the first afternoon I'm there, around 4:30, 5 o'clock, which then will let me push through to, say 10 or 11 that night. I'm then tired enough to get to sleep at what my body might think is, 5 to 6 p.m. This trip, though, I found that if I stayed up past midnight, maybe because I got, reading something after we got back from dinner or the pub, my body, sort of tipped over that inflection point, caught a second or, maybe a third wind, and would have been happy just to push through to, 2 to 3 in the morning, which, however, would have made that morning alarm much more difficult to handle. So I was a little careful there. The United flight to and from Edinburgh was a direct flight, which is always nice, but on an old 757 that had definitely seen better days and many days, many of those days. 8 hours on any narrow body is tough, but on a 757, which is the narrowest of narrow bodies, it's a bit tougher. And it was completely full, nothing out of the ordinary nowadays. Our flight from O'Hare, though, landed shortly after United's direct flight from Newark had landed, and so there was quite a queue for the non-EU passport line. Indeed, as we were coming off the jet bridge, an airport worker turned off the escalator and taped it off. The end of the passport queue was beginning to block it on the floor below. So I reached into my backpack, pulled out my UK passport, and was waved over to a set of 4 unmanned automated gates with no lines. I put my passport in, took my glasses off for the camera, and walked through when the gates were opened up. It was pretty slick. To be honest, even slicker than global entry here in the U.S. I still had to wait for my wife and kids to work their way through the non-EU line, but I made some good use of the time. I helped a mother and daughter from the Newark flight wrestle some really amazingly large bags onto a luggage cart, and then I had collected all of our luggage. Hey, you know what? If they had a Starbucks there in baggage claim like they do in O'Hare, it would have been damn close to a perfect morning. Following up, hey, what a great mailbag. Thanks to everybody for the emails, the Facebook posts, the Twitter comments. I really appreciate the feedback. So let me walk through them. Nick, who had no last name on the email, helped answer a question I had in the last episode about arbitraging different EU phone SIMs now that the EU has banned mobile roaming charges. Nick writes, "You mentioned having three EU SIMs to choose from in Dublin and working out the best value of the three. I live in the UK and have a UK SIM. If I go to Spain and call a UK number, even if that number belongs to the person next to me, then I just pay a local rate call. Or nothing if I have an unlimited calls account. However, if I call a Spanish number, then it counts as an overseas call, as if I were in the UK, even though I'm in Spain. So which is the best SIM to use will, to an extent, depend on the actual call rates, but also which country it is registered in and which country you are calling, independently of where you are. I hope this makes some sense and it's useful." Well, Nick, thanks for sending that in. I appreciate that. It actually does make a lot of sense. When I recall that the EU wanted to eliminate roaming charges, so a mobile call from the UK is the same as one from Spain. I mean, for us, though, for my family, we're rarely making a phone call. Indeed, I'm usually the only one making phone calls, and that's typically into a toll-free conference bridge. During our 10 days in Spain, I used 11 of the 300 minutes in my 30-day plan. My wife's 7-day plan ran out, and she never even noticed that she no longer had any text or phone on her mobile plan because her 1 gig of data did not run out. And I think that's where the arbitrage still could work on using the cheapest data plans. That will, though, take a good bit of wading through what are typically some really bad websites with confusing plan descriptions that are only partially in English. I think probably what's going to actually end up happening for all my bluster about arbitrage is I'll probably just default to using my UK SIM just out of sheer laziness. Steve Frick left a comment on the Travel Commons Facebook page about the new parallel loading baggage X-ray machines I talked about in Atlanta Hartsfield's pre-check line. Steve writes, "I agree with you that people are hesitant to jump the queue in front of others, and you do need mad ninja skills if you are in that first slot trying to grab one of those oversized bins." Steve linked to his blog post, where he has a video and a much more detailed description of the situation than I ever went into. Check out the show notes in this section, the follow-up section, for a link to his blog. It's a good write-up. I appreciate that, Steve. I have to tell you, when I was through Atlanta, after I got back from Scotland, so a couple of weeks ago, I do have to give the Atlanta TSA crew props for noticing the problems with kind of breaking into the stream of bins if you are in one of those front loading stations. So like I said, when I was in Atlanta a few weeks back, there was a this was something new. There's a TSA agent kind of at the parallel loading line. So if you think about it, everybody's standing there in front of the conveyor belt, and they had a TSA guy kind of behind the conveyor belt. And he was really just choreographing every bin push, having everyone hold up until all the previous bins had cleared, and then having everyone push their bins onto the conveyor at once. Like, okay, at the count of three, one, two, push. It was kind of a lot of fun. The thing is, though, I haven't seen this problem with the parallel loaders in, say, I don't know, Edinburgh or Heathrow or Madrid. You kind of got to wonder what's different that requires this level of sort of choreograph. Are the machines different? Do the Americans just need to kind of get some experience with this thing? I don't know what it is. I'll have to look a little harder at that. And there are a couple of comments from folks on the travel apps that they use, kind of following up on like the one topic in the last episode. So Dan Brenner left this on Facebook. "Great episode. Thanks, Dan. I appreciate that." He said, "Here's the apps I use the most. Air Canada and United. TripIt, although it's not as good as it could or should be. I used to use FlightTrack and really miss it. FlightAware, since the Air Canada app doesn't tell me where the plane is coming from. Uber and Lyft. packing. He said it's a, Dan says it's a list app to make sure that I don't forget something obvious. SPG, Yelp, Google Maps, and Waze. There's a few others, but those are the main ones. Well, Dan, thanks for that list. I really appreciate that. I've forgotten to mention Yelp in the last episode. I have some colleagues who are very heavy Yelp users. I mean, they'll build lists of restaurants and bars on Yelp before starting a project in a new city. I tend to use Yelp and the feature in Google Maps down at the bottom, it says explore food and drinks near you. So I tend to use both of those for restaurant suggestions, kind of in parallel when I'm in a new place. And quite honestly, I'm always surprised at how different the recommendations are. Gary Learned sent in on Twitter, "What I love about Lyft over Uber is their ability to produce a consolidated receipt of all my rides on a trip." Thanks for that, Gary. I'd actually noticed that functionality in the Lyft app, but at least for me, it's not hugely useful since we use Concor for our T&E reporting. And Concor picks up the individual Amex charges in a feed from Amex rather than a feed from Lyft. I mean, it would be very handy if Concor would pull a single consolidated charge from Lyft, because then I would only have to code it once. But that didn't happen. And then finally, a couple of weeks later on Twitter, Eddie Antor, who is always a chuckle in his responses on Twitter, said, "Binge listening to Travel Commons because I had to let an American Airlines voucher expire. On the other hand, I'm not being groped or dragged down the aisle screaming, so..." You know, Eddie, I don't know. Listening to me is better than being groped or dragged down the plane aisle? It kind of feels like being damned with faint praise. But thanks for that. That was pretty good. Sorry about the voucher. And in one last tweet, and this one was from Craig and Linda Martin of the Indie Travel Podcast. "Highlight of the week, meeting fellow travel podcaster Mark Peacock for lunch and craft beer in Edinburgh. 10 or so years of podcast friendship." Honestly, I think Linda and I have been trading emails for most of this year, seeing if we could physically meet up, because they've been in Europe this summer and we've been doing a number of trips this summer. Just trading emails to see if we could physically meet up after so many years of knowing each other in the travel podcast universe. One of us would hear the other mention travel plans in a podcast that might overlap with the others. It finally all came together at the end of our Scotland vacation and the beginning of theirs. They flew into Edinburgh Sunday night. We were leaving from Edinburgh Tuesday morning. So Monday lunch was kind of the call. We were staying over in St. Andrews, so I drove over into what was a new neighborhood for me in Edinburgh. It was kind of hip. It was kind of cool. I liked it. Linda had picked out a nice pub. Craig and Linda were staying there in that neighborhood. And so, you know, great pub, great beer list that we all kind of dove into, enjoyed. It was, I don't know, it's kind of one of the great things about travel, getting to meet up with friends. And in this case, for the first time. Hey, and if you've got any thoughts, questions, a story, a comment, the travel tip, voice of the traveler, send them along. Like I said, you guys did a great job this past episode. The email address is comments, COMMENTS at travelcommons.com. You can always use your smartphone to record and send in an audio comment. It's been a while since anybody's done that. You can send a Twitter message to M. Peacock. You can post your thoughts to the Travel Commons Facebook page, or you can always go old school and post them on the website at travelcommons.com. So the first topic on today's Travel Commons podcast is packing pro tips. So I got to tell you, getting everything I needed for our 10 days in Scotland into a carry-on bag pushed my packing skills just a bit. The trip was mostly hiking and hill walks with a couple of one-star Michelin restaurants thrown into the mix. And the forecast was for rain just about every day. We had a direct flight to Edinburgh, like I'd said before, on that lovely 757. And my daughter had to check a bag with stuff she was taking back to university. So kind of the carry-on limitation wasn't because I was concerned about lost luggage. Typically doesn't happen to me on direct flights. Or being able to power past the baggage carousel, a non-starter given the long EU immigration line at Edinburgh Airport. It was more, quite honestly, it was more about trunk space in the rental car. I mean, as it was, I was already doing sort of luggage Jenga just about every morning, trying to puzzle everything into the back of our Nissan Xterra. I easily spent an hour, which is 2 to 3 times longer than I usually spend, trying to figure out how to get hiking shoes, rain gear, dress shirts, and everything else into that 22-inch bag. It made me pack, I'd say, ruthlessly. Everything had to earn its space in the bag. And though I've sort of casually mentioned some of these ideas, some of these packing ideas in previous episodes, this latest packing experience kind of, in my head, sort of crystallized kind of this pro tip list. So here it goes. First and foremost, pack a single color family for your clothes and make it black. Three main reasons. Black makes everyone look thinner. It spans casual to smart dress codes, and black doesn't show stains. Okay, look, I mean, the thinner thing is a nice to have, especially for me. But hiding stains is the key. I packed 2 pair of slacks and wore a third one on the plane. I couldn't be one and done on any of those just because, you know, I took some incoming from a fork handling mishap. Second, number two, kind of follows on, no one and done outfits. Every piece of clothing has to serve multiple purposes so it can be worn multiple times. Every shirt has to work under multiple sweaters and has to go with more than one pair of pants. Versatility is key. Yet another reason to pack black. Third, think additively. Pack layers. This was the key to my last packing challenge also, that last week's spring break trip that I was split between Iceland with my son and southern Spain with my daughter and wife. I talked about that in episode 121. You pack multiple thin layers that you can pile on when it's cold and then be able also to wear those layers separately when it's not. Black sweaters and a black fleece vest are absolutely my layering go-tos. Fourth pro tip, wear your bulkiest clothes on the flight. I packed a hiking rain shell and flew in the blazer that I needed for the One Stars because the shell is infinitely more crushable. My only caveat to this is shoes. Now, I packed the hiking shoes even though they were bulkier than the kind of dressily casual walking shoes I was always also bringing, because I didn't want to set off the metal detectors in the pre-check line or get pulled out because the soles are too thick. Now, if you're not doing pre-check, then you're already taking your shoes off. Wear the biggest ones you got. Now, my fifth and final pro tip, use a nondescript black rolling bag. Black not only makes you look thinner, it also makes your bag look thinner to gate agents scanning for kind of bag sizer bait. My daughter had a baby blue roller bag for the longest time. She loved that color, and it was very easy to spot on the luggage carousel, which is a good thing because it ended up there a lot because gate agents were always pulling my daughter out of line to gate check that bag. Now, her current bag is sort of a dark eggplant purple. It's not black, but it's as close as I could get her. Now, if you're flying a budget airline that's a stickler for size, use a hard shell bag. It's, you know, it'll keep its dimensions better when you overstuff it, and that polycarbonate shell will slide past the metal bars of the sizer easier than, say, the ballistic nylon of a soft-sided bag. So there you go, my 5 packing pro tips. Now, if you've got some of your own to share, send them along to me through the usual channels. We just went through them in the end of the last topic, and I'll share them on the next episode. The second topic on today's Travel Commons podcast is traveling injured. Now, in a couple of past episodes, we've talked about how miserable it is to be sick on the road. Traveling injured is a bit similar, but not quite the same. While you're not, say, shivering under hotel blankets after you've cranked the thermostat as high as it'll go, you're still not sort of powering through the day at 100%. My most recent stint on, you know, kind of the travel injured reserve list was our May trip to Hungary. My wife had left the week before to visit her aunts and cousins, leaving me alone with the cat. I was working from home one nice day, and I decided to take a break for a bike ride. I figured I should use every opportunity I could to burn some calories then, because, look, Hungarian food, which I really enjoy, is not necessarily known as a spa cuisine. I did my normal sort of 17-mile circuit for the, I don't know, the 50th, the 60th time. Coming toward the last mile, I'm looking ahead to line up a turn, and boom, I hit some huge divot in the pavement that I've never seen before. My hands fly off the handlebar. I see that the front wheel is kind of turned 90 degrees, kind of sort of orthogonal to the direction of travel. Never a good thing for your front wheel. And boom, down I go, skidding across the asphalt. I come to a stop just short of the curb. Luckily, I always wear a helmet, so that was a good thing. But other than that, I was just, kind of a mammal, middle-aged man in Lycra. And so not a lot of protection when I'm skidding across that asphalt. Anyhow, I pick myself up, rinse the visible road rash with the last bits of water in my bottle, and then sort of limp my bike and myself back home. When I got home, I immediately hit the shower, scrubbed out the road rash with, as you might imagine, kind of, a good bit of loud vocal commentary. Luckily, I was the only one in the house. I'd let the cat out before. And then surveyed the damage. I mean, good size abrasions, all on my right elbow and forearm. That was pretty chopped up. My right, for lack of a better term, it was my right butt cheek. That was what I kind of skidded across the street on. Both knees, and there was a line, kind of diagonal line on my left chest from sort of my collarbone down, probably down, 3-4 inches, where I must have either popped the handlebar or popped the crossbar. I lost a bunch of skin, but I got to tell you, I felt lucky, especially with that mark on my chest. I felt lucky I didn't break a collarbone or something worse. So the Friday night flight to Vienna then was not a comfortable one. I mean, this is no knock on Austrian Airlines. I mean, I mentioned in an earlier podcast, I was very happy with their service. It was just primarily the seat. I mean, it was a standard coach seat, so not overly spacious. Pressing up against that large bit of road rash on my, right hip. Indeed, the abrasion was still, I think weeping is the technical term. And so halfway through the flight, I get up into the toilet with my tube of Neosporin, my gauze pads, and my surgical tape, kind of redressing that big abrasion. It was either that or change my pants. And following, given the pro tips I was packing, pro tips I was talking before, I couldn't do a one and done on these pants. Luckily, it was the quiet time. I had picked kind of the quiet time between, say, the after dinner and the just before landing toilet rushes. So there was kind of no banging on the door to hurry up or no dirty looks when I walked out. Every day was like that, sort of 30 minutes of removing and reapplying dressings. At first, it was 3 times a day, then 2 times a day. And then finally, when things sort of scabbed up a bit, just in the morning and really towards the end, it was as much sort of for cosmetic purposes, so people wouldn't ask me about it as much as anything. And I had brought enough Neosporin, enough surgical tape, enough gauze so that I did not have to go shopping for it in Hungary. I did end up having to skip the family trip to a Budapest thermal bath. I didn't want some bath guard calling me out of the pool in front of a couple of thousand Hungarians. And honestly, from my side, I wasn't quite sure how aggressively they were chlorinating that water. That wasn't my most awkward stint on the travel injured reserve list, though. Last year, I had squeezed a dermatologist appointment for a mole scan. Kind of squeezed it in right before flight out that afternoon. The doc said during the exam, the doc said, "This one looks a bit suspect," and putting his finger on a mole right in the middle of my back. He numbed it up, shaved it off, sent it to the lab, bandaged me up, and sent me on my way. "Change that dressing every day," he said, as I kind of bolted for O'Hare. The next morning in the hotel room bathroom, by myself, looking in the mirror at the gauze dressing kind of between my shoulder blades in the middle of my back that I couldn't reach, I wondered, how am I going to change this dressing? Like, call the front desk, call a colleague. Those just seemed way too much. That seemed to be, you know, way too big of an ask, way too personal of an ask. And as I'm thinking about it, I'm going like, well, you know, it really wasn't that big of a mole. Addressing is just going to wait till Friday. Okay, that's it. That's the end of Trevor Cummins Podcast number 133. I hope you all enjoyed the show. I hope you decide to stay subscribed. Better yet, I hope you decide to tell somebody else to subscribe. Check out the show notes for links that I mentioned, say to like Steve Frick's blog and actually I also will put in links to some of the prior episodes that I referenced. So again, check out the show notes for that as well as the music links. You can find us, as you know, SoundCloud, Stitcher, iTunes, and always if you have a story, thought, comment, gripe, moans, groans, cries of anguish, the voice of the traveler, send them along. Text, audio file, comments, COMMENTS at TravelCommons.com, and Peacock on Twitter, Travel Commons Facebook, or the website at TravelCommons.com. Thanks to everyone who has taken the time, Nick and Gary and Steve and Dan. Thanks for taking the time to send the email, you know, send me 140 characters on a tweet. Post comments on the Facebook page, website. I really, really appreciate it. And until the next time, hey, I think I'm just going to squeeze this one in. I've been doing pretty good on a podcast every month and an episode every month. I think I just missed one. Just squeezing this one in at the end of September. And so until we talk in October, take care, travel safe, and thanks for stopping by the Travel Commons. Bye now.